Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
There's this really well-known verse in the book of Revelation. You may well know it. It's the words of Jesus. He says, "Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me." It's a very popular verse. It's a very touching verse. We often read it personally. You know, Jesus will come into our hearts if we just let him. The funny thing is that if you read the verses around it, it means something totally different. Jesus is actually speaking these words to a church, a spiritually lukewarm church in an area called Laodicea. So he's standing outside a Christian church. Now, what's Jesus doing standing outside a church and asking to be invited back in? Over the last 3 weeks, author Michael Frost has been helping us rediscover who Jesus is and then discover how that affects our view of God, of the world, and of our spirituality. Tonight we're going to look at how a radical rediscovery of Jesus actually will change the church. And this, to some degree, is where you originally wrote the book for, isn't it? That's really what you focus on. That's really your calling.
Yes, it definitely is. Yeah, it's a desire to see the church, particularly here in Australia, but the book's published in America, so around the world, to rediscover what a Christ-filled church looks like.
And the book is Re-Jesus, A Wild Messiah for a Missional Church. You ask a number of questions in the book, and questions are always good because they engage the mind and you kind of have to wrestle with them until you let them go. And one of those questions is, if Jesus was to visit our churches one morning, what would we do with him? It's quite a penetrating question. Have you got any hunch as to what you think?
Different churches would do different things, I suspect. I can imagine Jesus slipping into some church and sitting in the back row and being quite unnoticed, frankly. In some cases, I can see Jesus raising a ruckus and causing all sorts of trouble. I was in a church once where they had a rule that in the fellowship hall you could eat pizza and play ball games and drink tea and coffee, but you couldn't take your tea and coffee into the quote-unquote sanctuary. You couldn't take your pizza or your ball game in there. Now, look, if you can't take pizza into the church, well, what on earth is Jesus going to be like when he gets into the church? Yeah, imagine him delivering pizzas to a church like that. I don't know. I mean, there is something playful and a bit naughty about Jesus, and certainly there is something very provocative about Jesus for religious people. And I don't know what some churches would do with him. I suspect some churches would welcome him with open arms. But some churches really do need the corrective of rediscovering Jesus, or being, as we say, re-Jesused. Yes, if you like.
A number of movies in the last few years have kind of raised this question. Now, we don't want to sound like, you know, throwing stones at the church. They're wonderful churches. We're all a part of them. Wonderful churches doing wonderful things. But for those of us who are part of them, we have to actually raise these questions and actually answer them honestly ourselves. Because if we don't, then sometimes the filmmakers and the cultural makers actually start to do that. And some of the movies recently have actually done that too. You actually raise that in the book. A number of movies that have raised questions. Hey, what is the church about these days? Is it still calibrating itself, molding itself around the very nature, personality, character of its founder?
Yeah, and some of the films that we talk about are films like the Swedish film As It Is in Heaven and another film called Chocolat. These are films that are saying, look, the church is kind of obsolete. It's full of rules. It's draconian. It's fundamentalist. It's lost its kind of core calling, I suppose, and we need to form communities of acceptance and love and grace aside from or next to or near churches. As It Is in Heaven is about a symphony conductor who goes back to his old hometown and takes over the church choir, and the choir becomes a community of grace and love and peace within the church. And of course the church is outraged about what this conductor is doing.
It's
and it's kind of a parable of the Gospels. It's what Jesus does. He comes into the church, if you like, of the Pharisees, and pulls together a band of people and creates havoc. And so when you see filmmakers doing that, I'm not saying we just take our cue from filmmakers, but they're saying something to us. They're saying, look, audiences want to see this. Audiences actually would love to be part of a choir, for example, a place where people are genuinely graced and loved. And in that film's a very interesting one, because there is actually conflict in the choir. There is actually some home truths are spoken. It's not easy sailing, but they're knitted together around the common cause, which is music. In Chocolat, it's different. There's a whole bunch of films like that. Well, isn't that exactly what Jesus did? He pulled together fishermen and tax collectors and zealots and, you know, the most unlikely people. And yeah, there was conflict and there was doubts and uncertainties and disappointments. But throughout all of that, they're pulled together around this common cause, which is seeing the kingdom of God unleashed around the world. Mm. Now, our filmmakers are saying, we'd love to be part of something like that. We just don't really want to be part of your very conventional churches. And I agree with what you said before. I'm not here just to bag the church. I think Jesus is present in the church. So don't mishear me. I don't think he's outside the church wanting to get in. Yes, Jesus is in our churches. But I think we need to take these signals clearly. People want to be part of an organic community of grace and love and honest, open sharing and love and with a mission and a cause and all of that. But they don't find that just being asked to sit in a pew every Sunday and sing some songs and listen to a sermon.
Mm. Michael Frost is our guest on Open House, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast Re-Jesus, a wild messiah for a missional church.
Not a mild messiah.
Slight Freudian slip there. Maybe I'm going back to one of those original images we were talking about 4 weeks ago. A wild messiah for a missional church is the name of the book. You've got this equation in the book, Christianity minus Christ equals religion. And then you kind of expose the negatives of religion. What are the negatives? Some will say, hang on, religion's a good thing, isn't it? Don't we need more religion?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on how you use the term, whether it's used technically or not. But yeah, religion is generally a set of practices or rituals through which a person goes in order to connect with God. And the remarkable thing is that Judaism was not a religion in that sense. Judaism was connection with God. As the people of God, as Lord over all. It was a radical new way of understanding relationship with the one true God. Mm. But it slowly but surely converted into religion. And we find that in the Gospels. We find Jewish leaders more concerned about legalism and the slightest infraction of these really tight, rigid laws. They'd boiled this marvelous sense of connection with God down to this list of do's and don'ts. And Jesus comes in and completely shatters the whole thing and takes them back to what they should be, and that is connection with God. Now connection with God is through Jesus himself. Mm. But this marvelous freedom, all these sinners and tax collectors and fishermen who discover, we can connect with God, we're forgiven in Jesus, and away we go. All these organic communities popping up all over the place of completely unqualified people, farmers and merchants and housewives and fathers and mothers, and boom, all of a sudden there's churches all over the place. There's no seminaries and there's no denominations and there's no denominational leaders or anything like that. You've got apostles running around shepherding them and keeping them on track. All that energy and vibrancy, all that organic new movement of life and faith, slowly but surely, a bit like Judaism, ends up becoming legalism. And throughout the history of the church, there have been renewal movements, and many of your listeners will be familiar with probably the most impactful one, I guess, was the Reformation, where there was a rediscovery. We connect with God through grace, through faith, not through all this legalism. But again, slowly but surely over time, I think human beings just have this tendency to want to boil things down.
Yes, and I was going to ask you that. Why do we tend to have that propensity to kind of draw back to that, draw back to the checklist of do's and don'ts, or it might be a particular ritual that we like doing, and we kind of then the dynamic interpersonal relationship that we have with Jesus and with the Father, with the Spirit of God, actually then gets replaced by this activity?
Yeah, it's because I think we have a fear of freedom at the very heart of things. In fact, after the Second World War, a guy called Eric Fromm wrote a book called The Fear of Freedom. And he was asking, why was it that the most sophisticated, educated nation in the world, Germany, at that time, would go so completely head over heels for fascism, for Nazism? I mean, why did we, of all places, fall for it? And his thesis was, we fear more than anything else true freedom. We prefer someone just to tell us how to live and what to do. And particularly in a time of great kind of social freedom, the 1920s in Germany, that was a frightening thing for a lot of Germans. Hitler comes along and says, right, we'll do this, 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 and this, and people went for it. Now, I'm not wanting to suggest the church is like Nazism, not for a minute, but what I'm saying is the freedom that Jesus offers to people is genuine, true freedom, freedom from guilt and fear and death and the devil, genuine freedom to create organic communities of faith centered around Jesus, which happens all around the world all the time at the moment. But there is something, I think, at the core of that for a lot of people, which is really frightening.
What is frightening about it? Why are we frightened by it? Responsibility?
Well, I guess we're frightened of the responsibility. We're frightened that that we're not able to be safe in the midst of such liberty. And we just want someone just to tell us what to do. Hmm. Go to church twice on Sunday, say your prayers, put some money in the offering. You know, they're manageable. I can do that. Whether I like doing it or not, I can get that. But Jesus invites us into absolute radical freedom.
Theopenhouse.net.au for our podcast with Michael Frost. We're talking about Re-Jesus, which is the name of his book that he's co-authored with Alan Hirsch, and how we need to rediscover a radical idea of who Jesus is, and it changes our life and our world. And particularly today, we're talking about how it changes Christian churches too. You've got this phrase, temple theology, very technical term in terms of the actual person in the street probably wouldn't even know what you're talking about. But I think it's worth pulling that into the discussion here. Unpack what that actually is and how you think it goes awry when it comes to talking about the church.
Well, it's a manifestation of the kind of religion that we were talking about before. Just as I said, religion is a set of rituals or practices for connecting with God. Along with that usually is that there are sort of sanctified spaces where those rituals are meant to be lived out. And traditionally they've been temples. Well, they're called different things in different places, cathedrals, basilicas, churches, you name it. So a temple theology is one which heightens the value of a particular place or space as a zone where rituals are enacted and people connect with God. I actually don't object to the fact that you might have a really special place that you love to be in and you really do feel God's presence. Some people love to be by the ocean or in the mountains or under a particular tree somewhere. And I really feel I'm able to connect with God meaningfully here. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where we say, well, this is the only tree you can worship God under, or you can only worship God at this beach, or more often than not, it's in this church or in that space. That's when we've held God captive to those zones and spaces. Mm. You know, I don't object to the idea that God is in church buildings. I think he is. But that's because I think God's everywhere. Mm. I think God is on the beach and under that favourite tree that you like to be at. But I also think that he's at the pub and the Sydney cricket ground and in your garden and in the art gallery and goodness knows where else. I think God is present everywhere. And we have to break free of this temple theology that talks about the house of God.
Yes, and wasn't that an amazing moment when Jesus died? And that curtain that was in the temple, the Old Testament Jewish temple at the time, separating the holy from the most holy place where God was supposed to reside, and it was ripped from top to bottom. Yeah. Very clear divine symbol. No more am I just relegated to some little spot.
No, exactly. And Jesus actually looks at one point at the temple and says to his mates, you know, I'm going to tear this thing down and 3 days later it'll be rebuilt. And they all think, well, that's pretty fast bricklaying if you can do that. But Jesus, of course, as we know, referring to himself, and what he's saying is, I am the temple of God. I am God. God resides within me. And this temple, this building, my body, will be torn down, broken, and then 3 days later I'll be resurrected. Well, that same language is then used in the rest of the Old Testament to talk about us, about human beings being the dwelling place of God. God finds us a pleasant place of shelter. He enters. We become the temples of God. I don't want to make more of that than is intended. We are not Jesus. We are not divine. He is the only divine person. But Christ comes into our hearts, if you like, resides with us. Well, now, if we become the temple of the living God, well, what does that mean? That means entirely different things to us having to go to a particular space in order to meet God. God dwells with us.
When you look at, say, contemporary church, then, if there was just two or three things that you think we probably most need to drag back to measure against the person of Jesus and recalibrate, what do you think they might be?
Well, I fear that a good deal of the way we do conventional church services is reinforcing the idea in people's minds that there's a compartmentalized kind of world. And so I think a lot of church services don't give me as an attender very much confidence that God's present with me all throughout the week. My life is never really talked about. The ordinary stuff of life is never in any way validated as a significant place of God's work and presence. It's almost like and you'll often have heard this language, I go along for a kind of a shot in the arm, a bit of encouragement, and then back out into the horrible old world. But the whole world is God's world. There isn't an in and an out. I mean, it's all God's world. And so churches need to help me to be able to recognize what it is to see God at work in all of my life, all the time. And very rarely is that the case. Often there are dramatic stories told about really unique experiences of God. Often the language from pulpits can not even be conversational language that I might have with my mates. Often the songs that I sing are almost indecipherable. I mean, they sound good and I think I know what they mean and I sing along, but I don't talk like that with anybody. There's almost a kind of, I've stepped into a parallel universe in a sense, and I might enjoy it and it might pump me up and bless me and educate me and all that sort of stuff, but it doesn't relate in any way very often to the world of which I'm part. And I don't know whether ministers, worship leaders and the like really take seriously the world that most of us live in, and when we do gather, have a gathering that helps to make sense of that for me.
Yes. And all of this, of course, comes out of a very high view of the local church, the local gathering of people in your mind, isn't it? I mean, this is your heart, this is your passion. All of these critiques, all these question marks all come down because this is the most genius thing that God has actually created, this thing called the church.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about before. It's this incredible freedom. I mean, the sort of suspicion that I often get from lots of church leaders is, oh, hang on, you advocate this really organic, free kind of creation of Jesus-focused communities. I mean, there'll be heresy, there'll be bad teaching, there'll be... But what they don't realize is that that's how most churches get started in this world. I mean, right across Africa, there's churches being started like that right this very minute. I've sat in underground churches in Vietnam. I've been in youth churches in Cambodia. I've been in Pentecostal churches in Brazil and Africa. They all got started by a band of people coming together, worshiping Jesus and seeking to make sense of that faith in their world. They're not necessarily all run by seminary-trained professionals. Now, I teach at a seminary, so that might raise some of your listeners to say, well, what are you doing that for? Because my view is we don't just need one person with a degree in theology in our churches. If you've got a church of 100 people, I'd like to have 100 of them, well, not necessarily with a degree in theology, but with some serious understanding of what they're on about, because we can't function any longer saying, well, the priest does ministry and we get ministered to, or our pastor is the preacher and we get preached to. No, we are all ministers of the gospel. So I have a very heightened view of that, there's no question.
Yes. Well, it's been fascinating this last few weeks to spend with you and to raise lots of questions, and I think there's going to be a lot to unpack over the next little while. I hope we unpack it. I hope we don't just simply listen and let this go. And the Open House .net.au for the podcast. If you missed any of the previous weeks, you can go and download them and take a listen. Michael Frost, thanks for your time. It's been really good.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Sharon.
Yeah, director of Sydney's Tinsley Institute and author of a stack of books, the most recent of which is co-authored with Alan Hirsch called Re-Jesus, A Wild Messiah for a Missional Church.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.